At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You're back with Bell and Sperling. Dave called in and said that Mark Field should send a bunch of flowers. Listen, it's no. Listen, it's a nice gesture. It's a nice gesture. I did have a thought. What about if it was Philip Hammond's wife and she came in and she said, "You're not home for your dinner. Where you been?" It could have been, couldn't it? You know. And we've attacked his wife and we didn't realise it was her. Listen, John, this story. Yeah. Everybody complains about trains. You complain about trains more than anybody.
Well, hang on a minute. I don't. I think it's great. I think trains are great.
Yeah, but
when do I complain about? You're putting things into my. Well, I do. I don't do that.
You've complained about 3 or 4 times. I've seen you.
When?
You've said the fella won't let me drive it.
I really do like the do you like the trains?
No, I don't like the trains.
Don't you?
What do I like about them?
Well, I tell you, it beats driving in.
Yeah, but I'd never come in a car with you. You driving, that frightened the life out of me.
Yeah.
Listen, rail giant Abellio gives workers smart watches so trains arrive on time. This is how bad it... So we had the leaves on the track.
Yeah.
Okay, now we've got smart watches.
Wow.
All right. We're joined now by Christian Woolmer, who's a rail expert. How far have we gone with this, Christian?
I don't know. I mean, traditionally... railway workers have always had watches, and in the old days they got given pocket watches which they would take out solemnly when the passenger would ask a question, and then they'll tell them, well, you know, it's coming in 8 minutes, sir.
Yes.
But I don't suppose that's what they're envisaging, old Abellio.
But they've got their phones on them, haven't they? I mean, the phones have got the time on them. Why do they need watches?
I have no idea what the reason for this story is. I've tried to ascertain, and they just said, well, they're going to give out these smart watches. Well, the smart watches aren't particularly smarter than any other watches. I mean, all watches basically keep good time these days. They're all electronic.
Don't be silly.
You can... What, you're trying to destroy your advertising
no,
here?
No, don't be silly. You can check your heart rate. You can see how many steps you take.
Yeah.
Very, very, very important.
Because driving the train in that front thing, you do a lot of steps.
Do a lot of steps.
Don't you?
Yeah, of course you do.
Drivers that will. I mean, the drivers have... I presume they mean the platform staff, actually. But, you know, it's one of life's mysteries. But I don't think this is the solution to make the trains go on time, actually. There's old-fashioned solutions to make the trains go on time, and it's called management and telling people what to do and being efficient about how you do it. I mean, just go to Japan, you know, where their trains operate within 5 seconds, you know. Yeah. They apologise if it's more than 5 seconds late.
Well, I was going to say that if we're spending money to try and make them, why aren't we giving them more watches?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, what they should be doing is putting more people on the platforms and making sure that, you know, they up to speed and waving the trains off quickly, making sure that the doors get closed quickly. All these sort of little details. When you're on, you know, southwestern trains, you know, busy commuter area, even if you waste 15 or 30 seconds at a station, it then has a knock-on effect. And by the time you get to Waterloo, you might be 5 minutes late and cause 5 minutes delay to the train behind you and the rest of the rush hour.
Yeah, I mean, what happens, like, obviously we got HS2, what happens if someone's watch stops? Like, is that all the railway just freezes?
They can't stop. I don't think they can stop.
What?
Digital watches, the smart watches can't.
Do you remember the old digital?
The battery could run out.
Oh, the battery could run out, you're quite right.
See, even in a Rolex, you have to sort of wave your arm around a bit to make it go.
I have to do with this one, although this is a looky-likey.
Johnny's got a looky likey. He's train would never turn up. He'd turn up about 3 days later. But do you see what I'm saying? That it's another thing that we've sort of, that they're probably press-wise, they didn't need coming out, that they've gone and spent money on, that, you know, rather than actually getting staff, it's a bit like the security with Mark Field yesterday. Why don't we just employ people to do jobs?
Absolutely. The railway industry has a habit of kind of own goals, making things more difficult for themselves. If you've been on trains lately, the number of announcements, I mean, anybody wants to hear, see it, say it, sort it.
I know.
86 times between London and Manchester.
I agree.
And I hardly exaggerate.
No, you're not exaggerating, no.
Doesn't want to ever travel on a train again. And they just don't understand. And then they announce things like, due to the inclement weather, you ought to be careful with your steps. Now, we call it rain, and anyway, just because they've warned us about it, does it mean that, we're then going to, I'm going to be careful, because that announcement just said, you've got to be careful. It's like, oh, God, I've got to be careful. I mean, they just got no idea about that they have customers.
I'll tell you what, Christian, I don't know if you can ever work with someone at Stratford, but the fella who goes, the Jubilee line, the platform 13 is not available. Platform 13 has not been available for the last year. I have never been on platform 13. Platform 13 is not available, but all other lines it is, and it speaks like that on platform 13.
But for many listeners who go through Stratford, Stratford has the most incomprehensible platform numbers, because number 1 and 2 and then next to number 10 and 11 and then number 7 and 8 or whatever.
Do you know what? You're 100% right. And another thing, and a lot of these announcements that we don't need, they're just wasting time. I never got Mind the Gap, right? Why do you say Mind the Gap? I know where it is. Yeah. I can see it. It's a giant hole between the platform and the train.
And if I don't mind it, I'll fall down it.
Yes, that's one of my favourites. I like that, though. It has an old-fashioned kind of ring to it.
Do they still do that? I haven't heard of Mind the Gap.
They do on some of the tube stations, yes. Mind the Gap.
Mind the Gap.
Do you know what, Christian, just because we spoke about this yesterday, that we said that, do you remember you used to dial 123 to get the time?
Tim. I'm old enough to remember Tim, mate.
Of course. That's what we called it. Tim? We said Tim. Yeah. And we said you sort of miss... I do miss Tim at the third stroke, and I suppose you're right. If we took away Mind the Gap, we've lost everything, haven't we?
It's true.
Absolutely. Ump. Do you remember Ump?
No.
You don't remember Ump?
No.
Ump was for the cricket score.
Oh, was it really?
Wow.
Wow. It's funny. Do you remember when you used to be able to dial a disc? You used to phone up and hear a record.
Really?
You don't remember that?
What was you born in 1923 or something?
I used to dial a disc.
Slightly later than that, but I would buy my 45s. Play them on my Danfetti.
Oh, do you know what? We've gone back in the old days now,
Christian. Were they great buying the old 45s?
Good old days. Christian, listen, it's been wonderful talking to you, and no doubt there's more to come on this story.
Yes, I'm sure.
Much more. Trains are always a story.
Thank you. The watches wear out, they'll come up with something else. We'll have an earpiece soon. Christian Warmer there, rail expert.
Love Sport.
Wills and Kate, Harry and Meghan.
Bit
of a bust up.
It's going off.
Do you think there is?
Yeah, they don't like her.
You think so?
She's not popular.
Okay. They've split the charities, okay, because Wills and Kate had their charity. Harry was involved in it. And then suddenly, Meghan's turned up and said, hang on a sec, son. We're on our bike. We've got a new charity.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of a rift. We're going to ask a friend of the show, and he's in the know.
Do you
like that?
I like that.
Richard Fitzwilliams, who's our royal commentator, and he's actually at Ascot today.
Yes.
How are you, Richard?
Well, I'm looking around at an absolutely gorgeous kaleidoscope of colour, fabulous hats, some impressive sculptures. I will ask it. This is the fourth day.
And what are the women wearing?
Some of them are wearing absolutely beautiful hats with flowers in the middle. That's always one of the picture hats. Some of the saucer-shaped hats. Some of them have small hats. Of course, it does depend. The main point is to have an ensemble, which is a thing of beauty, and to catch the eye. And the other thing is, of course, everyone who wears it, this is the funny thing, they think that they are lovely. And when it works a treat. But it can, of course, go wrong, and it can go very badly wrong. But in the, I have to say, this week, on the Tuesday, they were magnificent. One thing did puzzle me. When the Queen was coming in with a carriage,
yes.
I saw this lady next door to her, not having been apprised of who was in the royal carriage before, with a very large hat, much larger than the Queen's. It turned out to be, it was another Queen, Queen Maxima of the Netherlands, with King Willem-Alexander.
Wow.
He'd been inducted as a Garter Knight in the fabulous ceremony, I've seen it a couple of times, of the Order of the Garter, which dates back to 1348. That was on the Monday. And then the Queen clears
the sweet remember
music. It. Well, I mean, perhaps you were around at the time, and Edward the Third. But it's fabulous.
It's exciting
racing. It's picnics, and it's glorious weather today.
I bet it's lovely. I envy you, Richard. Yeah. What are you wearing, by the way?
I'm wearing a grey top hat. Now, almost an extinct species. Over 90% of top hats, because it's compulsory dress, that national dress and uniform.
Yes.
Over 90% of them are now black. Now, if you remember My Fair Lady, the Yellow Rolls Royce, Arabesque.
Absolutely, I do, Richard. What a great scene that is in that film, isn't it?
Absolutely fabulous.
Come on, Dover, move your blooming arse. Do you remember that bit?
Oh, that's the one that everyone remembers. Of course, in the original play, it was Eliza saying, "Not bloody lightly." In fact, that shocked audiences. But the odd thing is, if you think of four weddings and a funeral, they were still all wearing grey toppers. Nobody is at the moment. I can't see a single one bar two.
Well,
that's
there you go.
Looking over the grounds, which is really magnificent. It's sybaritic, but as you say, it's against the background of a split 16 months ago. If we'd been told that the Royal Foundation of the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge and then the then Duke and Duchess of Sussex would split up, we really wouldn't have believed it, and yet that is precisely what has happened.
Yeah. What's your take on it, Richard? What do you think? Why has this happened?
Why it's happened for two reasons. Firstly, there's absolutely no doubt it was a more sensible thing. Just it was more sensible for Meghan and Harry to live at Frogmore Cottage and not with their in-laws at Kensington Palace. And it was also more sensible for them to have their own office answerable to the Queen's Communications Secretary and not again be joined at the hip, because there was no reason for this. So the whole thing was that they are different. Their future is totally different. William and Kate will be king and queen consort. And the other aspect of this is all, and this is what, of course, we've got to come to, all these rumours of rows, disputes, personal differences, and all the rest of it. Put it this way, they're very different people. Their style is totally different. No family could have survived a year with two royal weddings and the birth of Prince Louis without at least some rows, and some of them have got to the papers. It doesn't mean that daggers drawn. What it means is they're different. Also, what it means is that William and Kate will be concentrating on charities closer to home. What it definitely means, and this has always been the case with the Sussexes, the Sussex brand is international. And notice that, you know, there'll be crossovers with mental illness, with Heads Together, which is their joint charity, and that will continue to be so. But what we've had, what we'll see, is Harry, for example, cooperating with Oprah Winfrey on the documentary series, and that is the sort of extra contribution the Sussexes can make. And also, around the Commonwealth, also gender equality, feminism, these issues they feel particularly strongly about.
Richard, so you're saying it's not because she's a moody old so-and-so?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, the press will always want a headline. And as I say, I do believe, I can't be specific, but I mean, obviously, some of the reports have obviously been true and some haven't. The point is that it makes sense in the long run. Yeah. They're doing it now. We didn't expect it. And that has caused, indeed, lots of eyebrows to be raised. But just we didn't expect they wouldn't be at Kensington Palace and we thought that they'd remain in the same office. But it makes sense to, you know, sometimes you say, "Vive la difference," and look what difference it's going to make to so many out there, whether they're veterans, whether they're disadvantaged young people, or whether they're those who need help. And, you know, mental illness is one of the issues that they'll both continue
Richard,
to tackle.
Do you think Kate likes Meghan?
I think that they're very different people. I simply don't know their exact relationship.
Come on, Richard. Don't sit on the fence, Richard.
I am sitting on the fence.
Don't sit on the fence.
It's a picket fence. It's hurting.
I think they get on perfectly well. Yeah. And as for fences hurting, may I remind you of a quote from Lloyd George, who said to a political opponent about political chaos at the moment, "You have sat on the fence so long that the iron has entered into your soul.
that's a lovely... What a great bit of writing.
Strangely, earlier, Richard, you mentioned Richard III, and it reminds me, I must go to the toilet.
he has to lower the tone, Richard, doesn't he?
As always.
He has to lower the tone.
As always.
You don't have to lower the tone here where you've got a sybaritic, sunlit upland of... an Edwardian garden party come to life for 5 days in the year, and these are the days the Queen really treasures, and we look forward to see what the colour of the Queen's hat is.
Just quickly, Richard, what about Frankie Dettori yesterday? What did you think about that?
Well, I mean, he is... Dettori is one of the great Ascot jockeys, and we all remember 1996, and we all remember the Magnificent Seven. And, I mean, frankly, I didn't have any luck on the horses yesterday, but then, on the other hand, the day before, I did. One of the joys of Ascot, and, of course, of Gold Cup Day yesterday, of particular interest, is to see, you know, the vagaries of the jockeys, the good one day, but off day the next, and so on. And I have to say, overall, it's been a pretty kind week for me. But I come for the royals, I come for the fashion.
Of course.
And, of course, the racing, it's an increasingly international field.
One question, Richard. Frankie Dettori or Lester Piggott?
Well, remember, Lester Piggott is a legend here, and the Queen has just literally unveiled a statue to him this week. So someone whose Ascot career started in 1952... I mean, he's unbeatable. And it's Dettori and Piggott, however, is the answer to your question.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, we'll run with that.
They're legends, both of them.
They are both legends.
Richard.
As are you, Richard.
As are you.
How kind. A
wonderful, wonderful time at Ascot. I've had many wonderful times there. Don't remember them too well, but have a wonderful time. Friend of the show there, Richard Fitzwilliams, Royal Commentator.
What a giver he is.
Just gives.
He just comes on and gives.
Just wonderful.
Absolutely fantastic.
Have you ever worn a top hat, John?
Yes. Yeah, for my sister's wedding.
Yeah.
I think that was about
what colour? Because Richard was saying that nobody wears a grey top hat anymore.
I don't remember now. I think it was black.
I had a grey one for my mate Charlie. I was best man at his wedding.
It was grey. But
what he's saying is everybody wears the black ones now. But the grey top hat, you don't really see much of them.
Fred Astaire wore the black top hat.
What, at Ascot?
I don't think you went to Ascot. In the film Top Hat.
All right, then. Fred Astaire or Gene Kelly?
Oh, that's hard. Both have got completely different styles. Mm. Both were fantastic. No, I can't pick.
Gene Kelly for me.
Yeah, no. A lot of people would go for Gene Kelly. I love Gene Kelly, but I love Fred just the same.
I went and bought a pair of tap shoes. This is the God's honest truth.
He was a great...
Our good friend, Brady Kurtz, will tell you that we used to go into school.
Yeah.
And I bought a pair of tap shoes just because I saw Gene Kelly.
Right.
And I thought he looked great.
Oh, he did look great.
Fred Astaire didn't look great, did he?
Well,
let's be honest.
Well, he did. He was very smart.
He looked like Oliver. He looked like Stan and Ollie. He looked a bit like him, didn't he?
Did he?
Sort of skinny face.
You mean Stan Laurel?
Stan and Laurel. Stan Laurel. That's what I mean. I always think about your mum and dad, Stan and Ollie.
Stan and Ollie, right?
And I just thought Gene Kelly looked great. So
Gene Kelly was, he had the jeans on. He was your working man's dancer.
Yeah. Well, I bought a pair of tap shoes.
Right.
And we used to go into school, and I was like eight or nine.
Right, okay.
And then we had a talent competition. And so stupid. And our teacher said, right, everyone's got to do something. And there was me and my mate Brad.
You had your taps.
And I had my tap shoes, and I had one move.
What did he have?
It was so fast. It was so fast, my feet.
Right.
It was like, there was a lot of smoke coming off them. Like that. And Brad said, well, I'll do impressions. Okay. And so I did my tap dancing whilst he did an impression of David Frost. That's the only person he could do.
No.
David Frost. And me doing...
Well, he was quite easy, David Frost, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He said, hello, good evening, welcome.
Yeah.
Can you
that's it. Right, go on, you do your David Frost, and we'll go to a break.
Let's go back in time.
Right, go on in.
Hello, good evening, welcome.
Listen, there's loads coming up the Bell and Spurling show, much better than this.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You're back with Bell and Spurling. John, I know you don't watch Love Island.
No, I do not.
But I haven't watched it the last couple of days, and there's a new girl coming who's about 7'9", and she's really turned everyone's heads, and she's set the cat amongst the pigeons, apparently. And that's what I've heard. But listen, there's this also this story about we met, you know, we did some PAs and some gigs last year, and some of the Love Island girls came out.
Yes.
The Scouse girl came out the first week, and this sort of, do you remember she thought she was it? Okay. She did.
Yeah, I mean, I took no notice of her, but yeah.
Because we were doing some photo shoots and blah, blah, blah.
You had a picture taken for your daughter.
Oh,
didn't you?
That was the second one. Yeah, but she came out the second week. She was nice, but the first one thought she was it. She thought she was a film star.
She was God's gift.
And the second week, no one took a blind bit of notice about her. But a lot of them are selling their suitcases, right? The rejects are selling their suitcases that you go in and they're selling them online. It's a real. Honestly, it's gone mad. It's gone mad.
Yeah, I'm sure it has.
We're going to talk to Charlotte Long now as an entertainment journalist. Afternoon, Charlotte.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
Ah, very well, thank you, Charlotte. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Can you tell us which girls you were talking about, or are you going to try and keep the names out of it?
Strangely enough, we had our Sven-Göran Eriksson song out again last year for the World Cup. So we were doing loads of...
it was Gareth.
We're doing loads of PAs and gigs and stuff. And we were doing a gig with John Terry and Razor Ruddock. And the first girl who came out the first week, I think, it might have been the third or something.
Who was it?
The blonde the Scouse girl. Can't remember what her name was.
Gabby? Was she quite small?
Yeah, I think she was. Well, she came out and we were all meant to do a photo shoot. And we was all sort of standing upstairs and they said, can you have some photos done? And then she just went, you have to give me 5 minutes. And we all went...
What accent is that?
I don't know. I couldn't.
That's a good accent.
I hadn't thought about her accent, if I'm honest. And we all went, no, love, we're not giving you 5 minutes.
Nah.
You can go and put your makeup on and you have your photos done by yourself. And even Razor was like, listen, we ain't waiting for her. And then the following week, a different girl came out who was really nice, dark girl. And my daughter, who my daughter really liked, she followed her. And then she was really nice, and then I noticed the Scouse girl came back for the second week, and nobody took a blind bit of notice of her because she'd had her week of fame of doing her PAs. And, you know, that's how it goes with this, isn't it?
Yeah.
You get your 5 minutes, and then the next one comes out, and they're famous that week.
Yeah. It's funny, I heard you mentioning about them selling their suitcases. The rejects from this year are now selling car air fresheners as well. That's sort of...
Oh, for goodness sake, Charlotte.
Yeah,
I'm not the biggest fan of Love Island, as you know.
Just give us a quick brief on it at the moment before we go on to Toy Story and stuff. Just tell us what the latest news on Love Island is.
Well, as you mentioned, there's a 7'9" girl who's entered the villa who's a model. Yeah. And she shares an ex-boyfriend with a girl who's already in the villa called Charlie. He was in a previous Love Island. It's like they all date each other.
Oh,
they don't stray away. And she's turning Danny's head, who was coupled up with Yuande, and now that's obviously got Yuande's back up, so she's not very happy, and it's looking like there's going to be a few tensions in the villa over the weekend.
Well, I'll tell you something, you've not sold it to me, Charlotte. I'm sorry, but I should not be watching it. Listen, more importantly, you was at the premiere of Toy Story 4, it was last Sunday. You was there, you spoke to Tom Hanks. What a lucky girl you are. And listen, look, is everyone sick of Toy Story, or is it a really good sequel?
It's really, really good. I didn't have any expectations for it when I went to see it, but it's been nearly 10 years since the last Toy Story movie.
Yeah.
And it's getting great reviews already, and it's got new people in it. Keanu Reeves is in this movie, as well as Christina Hendricks as well.
Wow.
And I really recommend it. I'd get everyone to go and see it. But Tom...
I'm sorry, Christina Hendricks. Now, she was in Mad Men, wasn't she?
Yeah, the redhead lady.
Yes, yes. One of my favourites, I must say, Charlotte.
Is this a sad one, Charlotte?
Well, Tom Hanks did say that he couldn't get through the last scene because he was crying too much. Same with Tim Allen.
That's it for Belle. That's it for him.
See, I honestly cry even if a kid wins a medal. I'm terrible.
Yeah, you definitely will be in tears in this movie.
Really?
It's quite an emotional ending. But it's also a brilliant film, and Mr. Potato Head, he features in the movie, and it's quite a sweet story because the actor who voices him passed away a couple of years ago, but his family wanted him in the movie, so they've used old old recordings of his voice to make sure Mr. Potato Head is in Toy Story 4.
Wow, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
So they was able to wove the story around so that they could put the old clips in.
Yeah, they managed to.
They managed to do it. Oh, wasn't that? Yeah. What was his name, that guy, the Mr. Potato Head?
Don Rickles.
Was it?
Was a comedian.
Wasn't it? Don Rickles, of course. He was friends with Frank Sinatra. He was quite old.
Just on that, just now you said that there is a bit of a sad ending, or Tom Hanks couldn't get through the end of it. Will there be a Toy Story 5, or are we saying that that's it?
Well, they're not saying no, and the franchise has made £1.5 billion so far, so I guess... You know, with that sort of money, I can see why they're not saying never, you know.
That's
so
incredible, isn't it?
Another thing I found quite interesting as well is they apparently were going to call Toy Story Plastic Buddies or Toys in the Hood before they settled on Toy Story.
Toys in the Hood, what a great...
Yeah.
I love Toys in the Hood. That's brilliant. Now, the director of Boys in the Hood... John Singleton, he died last year, didn't he? Did you know that?
No.
Boys in the Hood. And he was a 24-year-old, that was his directorial debut, Boys in the Hood.
Right.
I couldn't believe when I saw it on the Oscars that he'd passed away. Yeah. Now, Charlotte, you were also at the premiere of a film that I'm dying to see, which is Yesterday.
Yes. Are you a Beatles fan then?
I'm a huge...
Charlotte, you couldn't meet a bigger Beatles fan than Johnny Sterling.
Biggest, one of the biggest Beatles fans.
it's the film for you then.
It is, isn't it? Tell me about it. Did you enjoy it?
I really hate to disappoint you, but I didn't love it.
Right.
It is getting mixed reviews. It's got. If you like the Beatles, it's got loads of Beatle covers in it.
Yes.
The storyline's a bit questionable, I thought. But
is it really?
It's just... Yeah, and Ed Sheeran's in it a lot as well, so I don't know if you're a fan of Ed Sheeran.
Well, do you know what? The thing is about Ed Sheeran is that I love his voice. I think he's got a fantastic, soulful voice. I'm just not... It's the get-up. It's just the guitar. The guitar, him, and a few loop pedals. I don't get it. It's too empty for me.
And he's got so much money as well, and he still wears those outfits. Which
Also,
he plays himself in the movie, and a lot of people don't think he's a great actor, and he does struggle to play himself. But you know,
now the lead actor is the guy from EastEnders.
Himish Patel. He's great.
Himish Patel. I thought he was great in EastEnders as well. To be honest.
Yeah, he also sings all the Beatles songs as well, and he's got a really lovely voice, so you'll hear that if you go and watch the movie. But Richard Curtis, who wrote the movie, he said that he didn't actually want Ed Sheeran in the first place.
Oh, really?
He actually wanted Chris Martin because he's better looking. so he's quite open about that.
There's not a lot in it, to be fair. Danny Boyle is the director. Was it worth pulling out of Bond for this?
Yes, I guess so. Well, he said he pulled out of Bond because he didn't like the script of that. So I guess we've got to wait and see whether he pulled out for good reason.
But you didn't think the storyline was very good then?
Well, basically what happens, it's this musician who wakes up from a bike crash and no one has ever heard of the Beatles. And then, it's just, I don't know, it just sort of, you'll have to see it to understand. It sort of doesn't really go anywhere, I don't think.
I got you.
Charlotte,
yeah,
it's been wonderful having you on, and it's great talking about Toy Story. And I know a few people were at the premiere, strangely enough, and said it was fantastic. And no doubt we will have you on again in the coming weeks.
Next week. Thank you very
Indeed.
Much, Charlotte.
Thank
Charlotte.
You very much.
Well done.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Listen, when we come back, we're going to change it quite drastically, in fact. Mm. I was watching Question Time last night, and something really struck a chord with me. There was a woman in the audience who gave such a passionate speech about knife crime. She's obviously living in Tottenham, and she's living amongst it. And she really had a go at the MPs. And I just like, we're going to play this audio when we come back, and then we'll have a little debate about it. I do want to try and get her on the show if we can next week, because I'd really like to know what her views of how to change knife crime is. It's all coming up on the Bell and Spurning Show. Straight off this, don't go anywhere.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes. And then...
go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating US Wendy's during breakfast hours.
This is Love Sport.
You're back with Bell and Sperling. And look, I said this to you last night, John. I do watch Question Time. I do like it.
Yeah.
And I watched this last night. It was coming from Tottenham. And it was about, there was a big debate about knife crime and out of control it is. And we've said, we've had the ex-Met police officers on this show before. And me and you have said the other day, we come out of the recording studio and the whole of London tonight, there was four stories and every story was about a stabbing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, it's all we're hearing. And I do fear for my kids now. I really do. You know, I've got a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old and I do fear for him. And I watched this last night on Question Time and there was a woman who gave such a passionate speech and she's living amongst it and she said she's got 14 grandchildren.
Yeah.
And she, one of the key moments you hear, we're going to play a bit of audio now, is that she said, you know, we're burying our kids.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be this way. No. Our kids should be burying us. It shouldn't be like this. And I do want to try and, I'd love to get her on the show if we can next week and to find out what she thinks the solution is.
Yeah, she's very powerful, wasn't it?
Very powerful
speech.
So we're going to hear it now.
Yeah.
Over 20 years ago, when this postcode war started, this has been going on from 98, 99. And people were sat round tables talking about it then. It's now spiralled out of control. And you're still sitting down talking. What is it going to take for the MPs to sit down and say something's got to be done? Is it going to be your son or your daughter that's going to be killed for you to deal with it? We are fed up of seeing our parents crying. We're fed up of it. We're not supposed to be, as adults, we are not supposed to be burying our children. Our children are supposed to be burying us. And I've got 14 grandchildren and I am so scared. So scared. Not only London, this is happening in Manchester, it's happening in Birmingham, it's happening up and down the UK. The only place who has really taken up a stance to say that they are going to do something about it is Scotland. Yes. They have got off their backsides and done something. Yes. And you lot ain't doing nothing. And this is what I'm working for, to pay my tax, to sit down and watch you lot every year take a £2,000 pay rise. Yes. When people are out there suffering, your own soldiers are sleeping on the street that went and served in the war, and they're sleeping on the street and they're homeless. You lot don't give a damn about nobody other than yourselves.
Wow. Well, and she's absolutely right. I mean, you know, I kind of get choked up a bit.
Yeah, I do.
Wow.
It's a powerful speech.
Yeah, it really
and
is.
And that's really, when I saw it last night, I thought, I'd really like to try and get that woman on the show. And the boys are going to try and find out if she'll come on. Because, you know, listen, she went from knife crime onto the soldiers living on the streets. And that's a whole other conversation.
It certainly is.
But I think what she was trying to say to them, that panel was sitting there and saying, what are you going to do about it? You know, and we touched on the mayor, Mayor Khan. What are we going to do? But she's living amongst it, you know. And I think the people that are living amongst it must have an idea of what a possible solution could be, you know. And she touched on the fact, she said that this is up and down the country. Scotland have tackled it.
They're
now, you think, you said about Glasgow. I mean, Glasgow was one of the stabbing capitals of Europe.
Yeah, I mean, one
and
of the
And it's a different place now,
different
isn't
place
it?
Now.
Because probably, I mean, I don't know this 100%, but probably because of regeneration. They've pumped money into those
areas.
Yeah,
and Edinburgh is fantastic.
Edinburgh is fantastic, but Glasgow was always
always
a rough... Is it? Look at New York, Mayor Giuliani, what he done with New York.
Yeah, I mean
it was scary.
I mean, when I was out there a few years ago in New York, and I remember talking to a fellow from Duran Duran, what's his name, Stevens?
Andy Taylor,
sorry, not Andy Stevens.
No.
Andy Stevens was...
George Michael's manager.
He was.
Yeah. Andy Taylor.
Andy Taylor told me that, he said, when they used to come there in the 80s, you could not walk down the streets.
It was scary, yeah.
And he said, the way it changed so much.
It's a different place.
Yeah.
Different place. So why... Why can't we do that?
No.
Why can't we get... I mean, she started off by saying this started as postcode wars. Postcode wars?
I know, it's ridiculous.
So you're stabbing each other
because
you live in a different postcode.
You see, I'm worried that, for example, like Bin Laden and all that, you get the people that blow themselves up, the kamikazes, right? They're scary, right? People that want to kill themselves as well as another person, they are scary people.
Yeah.
Now, with these kids, right? I think what's scaring me about it is that I think they. When they stab somebody, they know they're going to go into prison, and it's part of the thing. It's part of the whatever it is. EastEnders ran a story, by the way.
Yeah.
You don't watch EastEnders. No. But EastEnders ran a story where the kid got stabbed and killed, and the kid went into prison.
Mm-hmm.
And his mum took the other kid's mum who got stabbed to prison. Because she said my son's
took her to court.
To prison to see him.
Oh right.
Because she said my son's full of remorse.
Right.
She went there and the kid. It was a good actor, this fella.
Okay.
And he came. He was like, I'm so sorry. And he was crying and tears were coming down. And she believed him and she said, I forgive you. I forgive you. She walked out and he looked at his mum and wouldn't smile like that.
Really?
Yeah. Now that's what I'm saying. I think that's what they're saying. These kids want to go in prison.
What do you mean they
want
to go in
prison? They want to go in, son. It's part of the... Did you ever see Goodfellas?
Okay. I don't think...
I'm telling you now.
No, wait. I don't think they want to go in prison.
They do.
No. I'm telling you. It's because of the options of where they're living and their home life. Look, the Met police officer who came on the other day said, most of these houses that he goes to, there's no father figure. There's no father figure. They come from broken homes.
No.
They come from poor homes. And there's no one to guide anyone.
I'm saying,
and
once they get into the gangs.
Agreed.
They've got this, there's a whole, whatever they call it.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
I agree with that because it looks, you know, it's part of the makeup. You've been in a gang, you go in prison.
Remember in Goodfellas? When he goes to prison?
It's your stripes.
And he comes out and he goes, hey, you broke your cherry.
Exactly.
You broke your cherry, you know?
I understand that. And I understand that that's once you're into it, okay? Once you're in the gang, they're your stripes.
Right.
We've got to stop them getting in gangs.
Absolutely.
So there's got to be some sort of regeneration for these families, and they've got to be some family core values.
Yeah.
They've got to have some father figures. They've got to have dads around. They've got to have...
How's it going to happen?
But that's...
How's it going to happen?
Well, this is why I'd like to get this woman, who was on Question Time, to come on, because she's living and breathing it.
Yeah, she is, yeah.
She said, you can listen to her voice. And she's got 14 grandkids. And she's saying, I don't want to be burying my kids and my grandkids. They're meant to be burying us. That's such a powerful statement.
It is powerful. It is very powerful.
She must have some insight into what should be done. It's people like her that the government should get involved, that they should... You know, get them in as advisors to help and say, look, what do we need to get rid of this? Because she's 100% right. That panel was sitting there, and nobody really is taking a stance and saying,
no.
Let's do something. Mayor Khan, what's he gonna do?
Oh, he's too busy putting balloons up of Donald Trump.
Yeah, I mean,
wasting time.
You cannot blame it on one person, but it's got to be a collective, and you've got to get with the people that are living and breathing it
in those
towns. And listen, if you can regenerate Glasgow and stop people stabbing each other,
and New York,
you can do it in London and Birmingham and Manchester.
Yeah.
You could. There's no reason why we can't do it, you know. And I know that, like I said, the Met police officer said he goes back to these homes where there's a mum there with three other kids, poor families, and her son has just stabbed someone. He's going to go to prison.
Yeah.
And there's no father figure there. There's no one to be scared of at home that's going to say, "Don't do that."
How do you create fathers? I mean, you know, it's there are so many one-parent families. It's ridiculous.
Mm.
But what can you do?
Well, I want to try. We're going to do our best to get her on next week because I think it's a really important thing.
That's not saying anything against the one-parent families. One-parent families are good.
Exactly.
Because I know some very good women that
there you go.
That are one-parent families.
So if it's been done,
yeah,
it can be done. Can't it
can it? Be done. It's all about education. I think it's all about education.
May well be.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
I use Airbnb
for
various trips. some of the gigs. I had a gig in Cannes last year, and rather than the company pay for my thing, I said stick that money in my account.
Yeah,
and
in my trousers. Yeah,
and I'll go and sort it out myself. And I did, and I got a nice little place that was going to be. It was a lot less money than what they actually paid
me. So if I go to Edinburgh this year, I could do that.
Yeah, but most of Edinburgh has been taken up.
Yeah.
So like all the Airbnbs will have been
taken up.
You should have booked that back 3 years ago.
Well, I didn't know I was going to.
I'll tell you, there's a little place just outside Edinburgh called Bowness.
Yeah.
I've done an Airbnb there. So, listen, we're talking about Airbnb and 10 European cities, including Amsterdam and Berlin, have asked the EU for help in fighting Airbnb. Because the prices are getting lowered, and I've got an even better way of lowering them, by the way. We're joined now by Russell Quirk, property expert. Afternoon, Russell.
Afternoon, hi.
Listen, even Johnny Spurnley has never really used Airbnb. I've been using it for probably about 3 years or so now. It's really exploded, hasn't it?
Yeah, no, it has. I mean, it's a massive, massive business now. I mean, I'm surprised that not everybody knows about it. I mean, The premise of Airbnb is really to kind of take over from hotels insofar as giving people the opportunity to use alternative accommodation, and effectively for people to turn over their own properties on a kind of part-time basis for travellers. And it's a great, great, great idea. And now we see that, we've got, as you alluded to, really 10 cities kind of whinging to Mother Europe as such on the basis that they're trying to regulate Airbnb to stop them being so dominant. And what they're saying is that as a consequence of a large proportion of properties across those European cities being put up as short-term lets by Airbnb, there's a shortage, and that in itself then is stopping people that want to live in properties full-time from having choice, and indeed obviously having to pay a higher rent as a consequence of that lack of choice.
Right.
I disagree.
Mm. Right, yeah. Russell, can you like look for just one room on Airbnb? Oh, you can.
Of course you can.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can go for. You could either. I mean, it's literally everything from a room in a flat to a whole flat to a house to a mansion. I mean, there are properties on Airbnb that, you know, if you want to go and hire a 10-bed mansion somewhere for New Year's Eve and it's available, you can do that.
Strange.
You know, it truly is. It's the democratisation of property. It's free markets personified. Huh. I think that Airbnb is a wonderful thing. If these cities really want to solve the problem of lack of choice and rents increasing, then they can do a lot more to facilitate more supply of housing as authorities themselves.
Bring your extortionate prices down, hotels, because they are extortionate prices.
Yeah, but you're getting a different thing. I remember sort of
extortionate
3.5-4 years ago when I was trying to sell a house in Kensal Rise, strangely enough, and the agent said to me, he couldn't sell it, and he said, "Have you thought about Airbnb?" And I thought, "What is that?" You know. But there again, just to sort of give you a bit, because it is quite short-term money, isn't it?
Well, short-term. So typically, people will stay for between one night and seven. I mean, it's for business travellers. It's for people on kind of ad hoc trips. You mentioned Edinburgh earlier. Yeah, of course, for the likes of Edinburgh Festival and for Glastonbury and so on. I mean, it's perfect because you've got much more choice than hotels. Hotels tend to be a bit of a racket, of course, in terms of the price you pay, and they're pretty bland and ordinary. I mean, here you could have, a flat with a balcony or a three-bed house overlooking something picturesque. I mean, it gives choice. And, I really resist the premise of authorities, particularly the EU, of course, themselves aren't even elected, most of them at the top end, intervening in the property market. Just because the likes of Amsterdam, Barcelona, Berlin, Bordeaux, Brussels and Krakow say, please come and help us, we don't know what to do. Mm. And actually, I think that if those cities do want to do something about it, as London has, London now, there's a 90-day per annum limit on Airbnb rentals.
Oh, is there? Because I know somebody who rented one for 3 months, strangely enough.
Yeah, the problem is regulating it. And that's what this story is about. So the the big cheeses in the EU apparently have ruled that Airbnb is not a real estate business or platform. It's actually just an information provider, and therefore that information is theirs, and they don't have to disseminate it to authorities, whereby the authorities then can see who is renting out which property to whom and for how long. And as I say, as a consequence, these big cities are bleating to the EU to change their minds so that effectively they can stop Airbnb operating in those cities and effectively give those properties back to the populace.
Yeah. Do you know what a lot of people, we've had a couple of guests on earlier, and they, about something else, talking about other subjects, sports subjects, and they didn't realise that you can make offers. And I did this the first time I actually booked one. It was in, I was doing a gig in Northern Ireland and in Belfast. And we looked at a couple and we said, oh, do you know what? We don't want to pay that. And we offered, and the guy went, yeah, okay, that's fair enough. And I had one in Cannes last year where I think he wanted 1,800 for a week, or 1,800, and offered him a grand, and he took it. A lot of people don't realise you can make offers on there.
Yeah, no, you can. You can make bids. And of course, we're talking about Airbnb. There are other platforms. I mean, you know, on a room basis, there's businesses like Ideal Flatmate who do, you know, these really clever, interesting things where they match flatmates using algorithms, you know, just to make sure that you don't end up with a, I don't know, God forbid, a Brexiteer and a Remainer trying to share a tiny flat together that would kind of tear strips off each other. So there's all sorts of clever stuff going on in this kind of shared economy gig space, I suppose. I think it's ought to be embraced and applauded.
Without a doubt. I mean, there was one person that's put up, should it be banned like London tried to ban Uber? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. I think that there is increased competition is good for the consumer. So what Uber has done is to provide more choice, more control for the consumer, and is driven the cost of traveling around London down by a significant amount. And look, there'll be a lot of black cab drivers listening to this that will now start sending me hate mail. But rather than moaning, you've got to compete. And whether that's competing on proposition or technology or cost, if Uber can do it, albeit arguably they lose money for every ride that they organise, I'm afraid it's the way of the world. It's free markets. It's democratisation. And, you know, if we want to intervene in all of these things, then how far does that go? And do not be then surprised if in a few years' time we end up being the equivalent of Venezuela.
Yeah, yeah, OK. All right. Well, listen, I love it. And what I love about it is I saw the interviews with the guys that set it up. Strangely enough, I've developed a property app in the last 3 years myself, which is downloadable at the moment. I'm not going to punt it at the moment, but it's something completely different. But I remember them sort of saying that nobody would take them seriously, and people said, who's going to rent out a room? I mean, you've got all sorts of problems with that.
And do you know what Airbnb's worth today?
Yeah, go on.
Go on.
$31 billion.
Incredible, isn't it? Yeah. Well, let's hope that my app is somewhere near that in the next couple of years.
Good luck. They could feed some starving countries, couldn't they? My goodness me. Wow.
Yeah, certainly could. Listen, Russell, thanks ever so much for your time. Russell Quirk there, property expert. Listen, I use Airbnb, but also use the hotels as well. Going to Florida this year, and I've booked a few hotels, but there's I've left a couple of gaps because I'm thinking, do you know what, I could probably
hotels on there.
No. They're private properties.
Gotcha.
You know, that you can just go, well, I want the room, or I want a three bed house, or I want an apartment, and I want it for 3 days for
get the app.
You download it now.
Love Sport.
You've been listening to Bell and Sperling. We will sign out. Thank you very much.